Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
I always look about, you know, teams who've won a league, their mindsets, their body language, their hunger, desire. And I see that so much in this Liverpool team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Rory McIlroy's game has changed a lot.
The OTB Brief, weekday mornings from 7:20 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Right, time for us to turn our attention to rugby, and I'm delighted to say Ronan O'Gara is with us. Ronan, joyeux Noël à vous.
Many happy returns. How are you, Jared? Oh, good to chat.
What's your Christmas actually going to be like this year?
Oh, gee, I haven't even thought it. Hopefully my parents will come over because it's a busy time for top 14. So I'm well used to it. It's a day or two, but I kind of like that. I like the digging in and picking out for the 25th and then running off on the 26th.
Yeah, no problems with that. And in terms of the rugby, things couldn't be going better for you guys at the moment.
Oh, I wouldn't be saying that now, Jar. I think we've had, what, 6 home games, 4 away games, and 1 are home games, and 1 half are away games, which is, yeah, we've made progress, absolutely, most definitely made progress, but it's early in the season. But, yeah, it would be an awful lot more negative, I suppose, after this pre-season if you weren't beginning to see... growth shoots.
Yeah.
So we are making progress, yeah.
Well, for anybody who's unaware, you're currently top of the table at the moment as things stand. It's a better position to be in than looking up at people.
Yeah, it sure is. That's the other side of it, you know what I mean? I think when it's good, you got to acknowledge it's good too, even for people that are very ambitious and very competitive, but everyone's looking for the perfect game, but you're even trying to tell players the perfect game doesn't really exist. If you could actually, imagine if you could play really well for 60 minutes of 80, you'd be really, really, really difficult to play against. So that means, obviously, if you've had a really good 60 minutes, your opposition hasn't had, really. So it doesn't take a genius to work out what I'm saying.
No, you'll win a whole heap of games. This is a very interesting time of year as well. Certainly the stories that we're hearing at the moment from a lot of agents are that the French and English clubs like to do their business in January so they know what the summer is going to be like. And the IRFUs that aren't having their conversations about contracts until they get a bit more visibility on what the year is going to be like in terms of crowds in the stadium, etc. Is that true about French clubs? Do you like to have all of your transfer signings business done by the end of January? Is there a deadline in your heads, or is that actually just agent speak in this part of the world?
It's becoming very interesting, that topic, Ger. I think I would say even well before that now. And that's more as you, I suppose, getting more experience in the game, and especially in the top 14 or club rugby. It's a business, so there's a huge amount of a financial side to it. And I'll give you the example, you know, of Will Skelton, who has signed from Saracens, and he literally has transformed us. And that's a bit of a sweeping statement, but he's had a brilliant personality, but he's a brilliant rugby player, and he's in the front five. The front five decide normally if you win or lose games. And his profile, I think, to the top 14, his strengths are really suited to how we're probably, I suppose, trying to play. And he has a winner's mentality. So one guy in that alone has made a massive difference. But you're always trying to improve your squad. So obviously, everyone has had a look at their books throughout the long period of COVID, and this financial outlook isn't great, so you have to get your signings right. And even for next season, you know, we're being made aware that the original budget you thought you had, that's kind of going to be slashed, and it's slashed again. So you really, really have to prioritize who you want and go after those people. So in terms of for next season, it's we'd be 90% done.
Right, that is really interesting because it means that there are probably going to be some Irish bargains available over the next while. You know, Gordon Darcy was talking to us during the week and he was saying, look, it's going to be a period of Christmas where there are families with kids looking around going, we don't have any income after June guaranteed. So if somebody comes and offers me something for 2 years or 3 years, what am I going to do? I'm going to tell the IRFU and they're going to say, yeah, well, look, you know, we're not going to have anything for you for another couple of months. The bird in the hand, two in the bush.
Yeah, it is a great, it's a very, very, realistic proposal or very realistic opportunity, depending on how you see it. And every player is very different, but I think also there's probably a misperception or a misunderstanding in terms of the opportunities in France. So, you know, we're allowed to have 11 non-GIF players next season, which means basically people who haven't had 5 years in a French setup as a young player between the ages of 18 to 23 or 5 years of a license, for example, from the ages of under 8 to under 18. So I haven't checked, but I knew I'd be talking to you about this. And I think my kids are GIF qualified now because they've had a FFR license for 5 years, which is not a bad thing to have if they were to take the rugby route. But in terms of how you can actually select your team for a weekend, Ger, if I just explain it to you, you can only have next season, so 17 of your 23 have to be GIF qualified. So, in terms of being able to, you can go after any players in the world to sign them to play with La Rochelle or to play with a French team, but you're only allowed 11 in your total squad. So there's a skill in that in itself, and there's a skill in you can't select your, I suppose, most performing rugby team every week. There has to be a balance because you get nailed financially if you don't allocate enough GIF players on your team sheet, if you can follow me.
Yeah, totally. It's really fascinating because it means that there's an opportunity for teams to be smart. It's not just you against all the money the whole time. The in other sports, if you're Man City, eventually your money is going to automatically guarantee that you're going to have the bulk of success. With this system, it leaves a little bit of room for you guys to be clever, at least, so you can counterbalance the money that some of the owners are injecting.
Yeah, but also I think the players are becoming smarter too, and I think the days of a one club man are over in rugby, Ger. I think the landscape is changing very, very quickly, and the opportunities for certain players will always be there and they'll always be attractive. So it leads into your question about certain Irish players, but a lot of them would have, I'd say, have their homework done, and they'd know of their position in terms of where they lie in the Japanese market, in the French market, or in the English market, as opposed to the domestic market. So these guys, I'd say, will have that weighed up, and then they have a decision to make. But there's a reason they have a decision to make, because they're obviously very good players and they're sought after players. But a lot of players, I suppose, that are playing the club game playing for the provinces, it's not a good position to be in if you don't really know, especially if you have children and you're providing for your family. If you don't really know 4 months out where you stand, that creates problems for everybody.
Yeah, especially at that stage of your career where you're in your early 30s and you feel like you have a couple of years of top quality rugby left, and this is your chance to cash in. One last question on this before I talk about the game at the weekend. There was certainly a period of time there where a lot of French clubs wouldn't speak to the Irish players because they kind of felt like they were being used as bait to try and puff up the contract in Ireland. Has that gone? Is the market changed now, or actually there will be, do you expect there to be a few more Irish players this year because of the circumstances that the IRFU find themselves in?
Yeah, I didn't, I just, that question probably on a general scale, I'd probably have to apply that to an individual. Someone like Tadhg Furlong would be very attractive in the fact that he's a world-class tight head, and I think his personality would be very adaptable to playing in whatever club he is, yet there's a driving force inside him that he wants to play for Ireland. So he has to make that trade-off in terms of what he wants to do. But I think to answer your question, you may well find that that Irish players will end up in the Premiership or in France this summer because of maybe because of the idea of a different challenge. That is most definitely there. But I think the idea of there being, mass emigration, that will never happen because the reality is, especially now for Six Nations, there's an awful lot of domestic rugby that takes place in the top 14 when the Six Nations are on. But where are we with this unwritten rule? Are, for example, if Ty Furlong was to sign for La Rochelle, is he going to be not selected for Ireland? That's a difficult one. And if you're the president and if he's playing for Ireland, he wouldn't be that attractive.
I suspect they'd make a rule for Ty because he's world class, the same rule they made for Johnny Sexton. But somebody who's maybe on the in and out of the team at the moment, I wonder if Peter Mahoney decided that he wanted a new challenge in life, for example, I'm not sure that they would pick him at this stage, but actually he would clearly be worth a place in the matchday squad. So, and you can see somebody like him maybe thinking, actually, this is the right thing for me to do. Would you have gone there in retrospect as a player and played out your last couple of years if it meant you couldn't have had those last couple of years with Ireland?
I know, and to be fair, it's different times, Gerry. I think it is. I was part of a club team where we were brought up on loyalty and being unbelievably competitive. You know, I'm like, a broken drum for repeating. I played in 10 semi-finals in Europe. There wasn't a bigger buzz than that, you know. There was something that meant so much. So that there was definitely offers to go. But as you said, you got to do a bit of a SWOT analysis and kind of weigh up what you want to do. And your rugby career is very short at the same time. But at my time, you just can't leave Munster. It's too good.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. And I guess things are definitely, it is a different era now. And I guess,
yeah, it is. And there's different opportunities. And I think an awful lot of players are an awful lot more mature and they've probably started professionalism a long time before we ever even thought about it. So they're quite advanced. And
it would have been really interesting to see what Paul O'Connell's career in France would have looked like as a player and how that would have fed into what happened and how many other people might have followed him along that path, given, unfortunately, we didn't get to see it because of the injury. But, I can see that there probably will be a trend in coming years where players who are reaching the end will go for those couple of years and see what that experience is like. And even Rob Kearney having the experience that he's going to have down in Australia.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Can we talk about the game at the weekend? Andy Farrell's picked a very strong team for this match. The whole idea of this not being too important in the overall scheme of things, that's out the window because he's picked a team to win the game.
Yeah, of course he has, yeah. But I think because there's probably been, quite a backlash in terms of negative performances up to this point. So all of a sudden now the narrative has changed that Farrell has picked a strong team. Of course he's picked a strong team. He needs to win this game and he wants to win this game. But these players that play for Ireland are good players. And they have been good players for a long time. We've lost to England and France and that can happen. But the other side of that, I think, Ger, is probably it's been manner or some performances. The Georgia game was dire and I think, you know, that has to be said. The Wales game was very, very good, but Wales are in the doldrums. There's no doubt about that. So I think this is probably a great indicator of a team under pressure, a team needing a performance. Can they produce?
The Scots, obviously, we dealt with them very well at the World Cup, but, you know, That was a Scottish team which seemed to be tearing itself apart a little bit, had internal rows in the camp. They seem to have progressed significantly from then to here and were unfortunate to lose against Ireland in the Six Nations last year. This is a good opportunity for them to say, OK, for Ireland to say, we do have a plan. You can see it here against a team who are improving, and to take a break now before the Six Nations with some confidence as opposed to a lot of doubts. So there's a lot riding on it.
There is. Obviously the result too, but I think the performance and potentially the way, I suppose, Ireland would play the game, that's interesting to people too, because people are looking for a shift. But when rugby's played well, it's played pretty similarly by a lot of teams. If you win the collisions, you get in the front foot and you can kind of dictate the tempo of the game. We saw that against England and France. We didn't do that, so it makes you look very average, especially the halfbacks. And that's what happens. I think from the Ireland's point of view against Scotland, what is a major advantage to them is the fact that there's a new cap at 10, and that's never ideal if you're trying to, you know, Jaco van der Vaart will be so much better in 10 games time than he is tomorrow. That just happens in Test rugby and at the start of your career. Scotland without Finn Russell are a different team. I'm absolutely convinced about that. And in the modern game, he's very hard to defend, because I think he actually is the most instinctive player probably playing in Europe, and he just trusts his instincts. Sometimes they backfire, as we saw once or twice in a European Cup final, but also without his instinct, Racing wouldn't have got to a final. So they'll be weakened in the number 10 position, I think. It's a great opportunity for the young Scottish 10 coming in, making his debut. The Scottish bench looks interesting. You look at their backs replacements. There's Heidegger, Klein. There's Maitland, who's obviously very, very experienced. And it's Jones, is it? Hugh Jones, isn't it? I think is the other sub replacement. And hugely experienced. So that's...
Yeah, all Hugh of Jones. Sudden,
they wouldn't be... when you're on the pitch, for example, away from home, and you see one of the three of them coming in, which will inevitably happen, I think that'll give a lift to them, because sometimes in Scottish teams over the years, you may be looking at, oh, who's coming on here? Is this going to add or take away from us? I think they have a very underrated coach in Steve Tandy. I spent a bit of time chatting to him when I did my two seasons in Super Rugby. He was coaching the Waratahs and made a big input there. And I think he was head coach with the Ospreys, now specialising in the defence. And their points conceded in last year's Six Nations, I think, was ridiculously low. So they most definitely are playing from, and they've tightened up a lot of things. I just wonder tomorrow. I don't think if you number off, I don't think they have the quality to match Ireland.
Okay, so we would expect an Irish victory given the quality of performance and quality of the team that we have and the experience that we have in the team. How are we trying to play? That's been the overarching question over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and we haven't really, you know, we've heard this phrase heads up rugby, and then we heard Andy Farrelly kind of quite pissed off with how the team played over the last couple of times. What are they actually trying to do, and why is it not working?
Oh, I think, you know, Ger, I think what they're trying to do, and I'm speaking as a coach there, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get over the game line to play with fast ball, and then you have a kind of an option of A, B and C. You know, that heads up rugby, a lot of people are probably making fun of that. I don't agree with that. I think it is the right way to do it, but it's not just heads up rugby and heads up rugby as if you've thought about it for the first time. So there would be a plan. There's very different ways of positioning your forwards. Ireland seem quite similar to a lot of attack orientated teams, how they position their forwards in a kind of a 1-3-2-1-1 or a 1-3-2-2 setup, and they play from that and they get within their game. And you saw against Wales and Italy, it worked, but it didn't work even last weekend. It didn't work because I felt probably the scanning between the inside backs wasn't, and the outside backs, and the levels of communication wasn't as effective as it needed to be to identify where the space is. So they need to identify where the space is to get into that space, and then their game rolls. But, you know, I think there's never this... I think there's probably been an overemphasis on what style are Ireland trying to play. They're trying to play like any smart rugby players are trying to do. They're trying to get the better of their opponents with quite a simple game plan. But the reality is, if you don't get over the game line, or if you're not on balls, you don't win the line out, it's hard to launch your game.
Okay, so we can't judge just yet until they fix the set piece. And once they fix the set piece...
No, but I think the phase game obviously was disappointing against Georgia. You know, the fact that these guys are big men, and I think they were probably vulnerable to a little bit more footwork, but we ran probably consistently into brick walls, where if there was a little bit of variation in terms of identifying a channel or two wider, there would have been big opportunity. But I think it takes a few games to get to that stage. And also, with the team, you have to ask where the confidence is too. You know, it's so underappreciated in top-level sports. The times I can remember myself from playing, like the days when you go on autopilot and you don't even have to think and the game is so easy, as the days when, you know, I mean, you have an error or two with your first two actions and you're beginning to feel under the pump a little bit and you kind of go into your shell, and if that's multiplied by even five in the backs, it's not a good sign. You know, I think it'll be good tomorrow to see where Henshaw's at. His individual try against France leaves me scratching my head in the fact, like, how good a score is that?
Mm.
But when did we see that before that game? Because if he has it in the locker, it needs to come out more often. And you know, you see him with Leinster, he can fling passes off either hands beautifully. He can play both games, but we haven't seen enough of it. Is that the malaise of the collective, or is it down to the individual? I can't answer that, because he came into training camp when I was there, but I never really got to have the great conversations with someone like Robbie Henshaw.
Yeah, it's just that it's replicated along the way, and it's not just the backs either, that so many of them don't seem to be playing to their potential at the moment. You definitely feel like it feels like we need to have a patience with what Farrell's trying to do, and maybe at the end of the Six Nations we can see, well, okay, there are clear signs of progress. He's got the team to a point where they're comfortable, and their confidence in understanding what their responsibilities are has given them the confidence to play within that system.
Yeah, I think also too, and the fact is probably worth mentioning, you know, you've gone from probably one system where I would say it was so coach driven to now where it's kind of gone to empowering the players. And that shift, because in Ireland, as we know, Gerder, the turnover of players between the squads hasn't been that great. Yes, there's been a few new caps, but the majority of the squad played under Joe, and now they're playing under Andy Farrell's management. And they seem to be, and I'm only able to comment from the outside because I haven't been into camp, but it seems to be two very different approaches, both with massive strengths. And we've seen, obviously, you know what I mean, how Joe changed, I suppose, the landscape for Irish rugby. Now Andy is doing it in a different way, probably more collaborative approach, where he is backing his players and he's investing in them to drive standards, to drive game plans, to drive decision making. But as he said himself against Georgia, that isn't good enough. And if it continues like that, then maybe it has to become more coach ownership.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like you're predicting an Ireland win.
Yeah, I am. I do. I think there's a big performance in the team. I watch a lot of these players regularly. I think they'll come out firing.
Right, Ronan, enjoy the game. Thanks a million. Cheers.
See you, Jared. Thank you.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.